It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Syria, the darkness visible of Syria, these many months of war in Europe have taken us away from asking hard questions about what is to be done with the Assad regime, clearly a rogue state, clearly accused of war crimes over these last years, decades. Malcolm Hohnlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations is with me. And we're very pleased to welcome David Adesnik, Senior Fellow, Director of Research at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. David, the first and obvious puzzle, is Russia still intimately involved in the Syrian war? And does Russia regard Assad as an ally in the larger conflict of Russia against NATO? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Thanks for having me back. Absolutely. Assad is very much against the West. He was one of the very first people to endorse Putin's invasion of Ukraine. And it makes sense, given how completely dependent he is on the tandem of Russian and Iranian support. Russians provide more the air power, Iranians the land power to keep Assad where he is. He's fairly well entrenched, but far from taking back all of Syria's territory, given the U.S. in the north and rebels elsewhere.
The detail, David, it comes up again and again. Are there Syrian troops, Hezbollah troops, volunteers, mercenaries, hired guns, anything like that in the Ukraine conflict, to your knowledge?
So far, every report has turned out to not have much to it or to be, you know, a big exaggeration. There are indications that some recruiting is going on within Syria. But in terms of reports on the ground of people actually leaving Syria to go to the battlefields or reports in Ukraine or of any Syrians actually arriving, we really can't find anything substantive.
Malcolm, you have a question for David.
Yeah. What do you say about the reports that King Abdullah in his visit, King Abdullah of Jordan, in Washington last week, raised concerns about the Iranians filling the voids that Russia leaves as they draw down more of their troops from Syria into Ukraine?
Yeah, King Abdullah is not the first one to raise that point. There have even been some reports on the ground of Russians because they haven't been taking Syrians to Ukraine, but it does seem like they're moving their own troops around, possibly to take some out of the country to Ukraine where they need more of their own. It doesn't seem like any major facilities like the big air base at Khmeimim or the naval base at Tartus are going to go over. I'm not sure these are really substantive advantages the Iranians are gaining. And I think that really you're going to see a situation going forward where Syria remains dependent on both of its patrons. Russia provides the air power, the high-level military advice. Iran provides money, oil, and fighters on the ground. So they're, you know, they compete with influence over Syria, but I don't see a big tilt toward Iran.
But does this affect the cooperation, the deconfliction, as they call it, which allowed Israel to strike Hezbollah and Iranian supply lines? If the role of Russia changes, does that mean that Israel's ability to move? We saw the case of firing of an S-300 anti-air missile last week at Israeli jets.
Right. So that was very surprising in the sense it was Russia being more active in Syria. If the big issue were Russia doing less in Syria, then it shouldn't be an issue for Israel. It's not as if Iran can come in with comparable assets and challenge the Israeli Air Force. I'm not an expert on air tactics, but I don't have the impression they could do that. So there's some concern perhaps Iran would be more aggressive if the Russians were not restraining it. But I don't see a lot of signs that the Russians were restraining Iran anyhow. Russia's strategy has been passive. Not to antagonize Iran, not to antagonize Israel, letting them fight it out. And there's been plenty of fighting.
The Biden administration has a choice going forward about how to deal with Syria. Sanctions are the conversation because of the Russian aggression in Europe. But from your report at FDD, the Biden administration is not as clear about sanctions on the Assad regime, especially because it's encouraging engagement is the word you very carefully choose, David. engagement with whom and to what end? What do we get from allowing Assad to get up off the floor?
Sure. So effectively, the administration's official public line is it's not lifting any sanctions on Syria. It's not going to engage until the conflict is resolved on the political level. But what it's always careful not to say is that it's making any active efforts to deter others from engaging, especially Arab governments, the Emiratis, the Jordanians, the Egyptians, who have been moving to engage with Assad. And the big project that's sort of the centerpiece is this pair of energy deals, gas and electric power, worth an estimated $600 million, not yet financed, but with a lot of potential. And the U.S. has been backing it. So even though this is a major business international deal that will deliver tens of millions of benefits to Assad, the U.S. has been pushing it forward. And I think that's a direct violation of the sanctions law known as CSER. The benefits for the countries involved, the Egyptians, the Jordanians, get to make money by selling gas and electric power. For them, the benefits are clear. For the U.S., it seems to be this idea that somehow you can mitigate Iranian influence if you let friendly Arab governments engage with Assad. But I think that's a delusion. The U.S. continually underestimates how dependent Assad is on Iran.
And the sense that the U.S. has abandoned any hope of removing of regime change in Syria becomes more and more apparent as they make these moves. But do you see them also underscoring the sanctions or limiting the sanctions in view of their interest in promoting the energy deals?
Yeah. So first of all, just to make the energy deal possible, they have to, you know, bend sanctions law to the breaking point. With overwhelming bipartisan support, Congress passed what's called the CSER Act, or CSER, Syria Civilian Protection Act, meant to hold Assad accountable. CSER refers to the military defector who brought this incredible tranche of images showing more than 10,000 corpses tortured and beaten to death in Assad's prisons, really inspiring the need for a response. And these sanctions are mandatory, but the Biden administration has had practically no new designations. Its enforcement is lackluster at best. And any fair reading of the text of that law would prohibit American support for this energy deal, but they're still going forward.
Has the administration's light hand, is that explained by the Iran negotiations in Vienna, whenever they're on or whenever they're off? Is this an aspect of making Iran accede to the new Iran deal?
So it fits that pattern, but it's hard exactly to find certainly any sort of statement. The administration understands it doesn't want to ever admit that it's going easy on a mass murderer like Assad in order to facilitate negotiations with Iran. But if you recall, when the Wall Street Journal several years ago reported that Obama sent a personal letter to the Iranian supreme leader, effectively reassuring him we wouldn't bring down Assad, this is clearly part of the thinking. But I would say a second part of it is that in the National Security Council has an individual in charge of the policy for the Middle East named Brett McGurk, who has served in both the Obama and Trump administrations. And he's really someone who has continually shown a disregard for human rights, that he published a lengthy essay in Foreign Affairs when he was out of government, sort of saying this is what we should be doing in Syria. And the idea of human rights isn't even mentioned. He's basically someone who wants to focus exclusively on ISIS and put human rights aside.
Malcolm?
Brett is a very seasoned observer of the region. I was wondering whether you see any implication of the election in Lebanon for Syria. How do they see the fact that Hezbollah, by their own admission yesterday, you know, don't have majority and have lost popularity?
I tend to be of the view that the limited setbacks at the polls for Hezbollah don't change the fundamental situation that they are in control in Lebanon, which means Tehran is in control. Even before Hezbollah had a parliamentary majority, the fact that they could bring their troops out and effectively veto what the Lebanese government was doing meant that they were the ones controlling any decisive moves in the government. And it also means their alliance with Iran and with Syria continues. So I don't really see material change. And it's not even clear to me in the relationship with Syria. And I don't even see necessarily that much of an opening or any opening coming in Lebanon.
Dr. David Adesnik is a senior fellow with the director of research at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, Malcolm Hohnlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. I'm John Batch.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.